Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. I welcome George Friedman, the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, to comment on what we can see so far, given fog of war, of the Russian plan and how it is being executed in distress. George, you write that Russia has three columns in the initial plan to hit from the south, from the east, and the north. Three armor columns. Was that wise, given how the war is going? Good evening to you, George.
I think it was a superb strategy in 1944. At this point, it doesn't work that well. So he's got massive armor that are supposed to converge in the center of the country. And his problem is, how do you manage that large a force, hundreds of miles apart, to get to the right point at the right time? And second, how do you fuel it? The problem of tanks is that they are fuel hogs. The process of delivering the fuel is sometimes more important than managing the tank. And he really wasn't able to deliver the fuel. What we saw with the northern group did, stalling out on the road toward Kiev from Belarus, had a 40-kilometer paralysis. So this was an attempt to launch an armored attack against an enemy that didn't have armor, was only an infantry force. And it was poorly managed and poorly conceived.
You mentioned 1944, a new book by James Holland about a Sherman tank regiment, British, in 1944. They invented tactics that we now take for granted to work with the infantry, to have good communications with the infantry officers. I've puzzled, George, does Russia work with infantry? Those big tanks are vulnerable to our weapons unless infantry is around the story.
Well, the tanks were developed because the infantry was no longer effective. It's because of machine guns and artillery. And the tanks were supposed to protect the infantry. In the 1940s, that worked. The tanks protected the infantry. They were key. Now we have anti-tank weapons carried by infantrymen. And those infantrymen, it's very effective. First seen in 1973 in the Arab-Israeli War, and it was a Russian, an AT-3 Sagger, that was used against Israeli tanks, destroyed a brigade. Now the infantry is the greatest threat that the tank has. An infantryman armed with an anti-tank weapon of modern sort can take that taken out. So you actually should push the infantry ahead of the tank, clearing the way, raising the question why you bring in a tank. But in this particular case, the Russians stuck to a 1944 model. The tanks went in without infantry. And I think when the war is over, we will see they paid heavily for it.
Communications. The puzzle has been raised again and again. Why is the internet still working? But what can we say about the ability of a modern army to communicate to its many prongs?
Well, it's one thing to have your own communications network. It will break down. It's difficult to operate. But at least at the top levels, you can have redundant communications to get through. The real mystery is why they allowed the defenders to communicate with each other. Clearly, there's communication because the infantry is converging at certain points and leaving it. But also, they allow the world to hear what was going on in the Ukraine. Wars are always miserable, but when you are able to display it or discuss it, that's really a mistake from a propaganda point of view. So in the case of Ukraine, they didn't shut them down, which raises the question, do they understand modern warfare and its political aspect? And secondly, do they have the technology to shut down communications?
The puzzle also, George, is when we're looking at the story so far, is the war on the cities. You make the very salient point that a city is in a defensive posture from the beginning, and there is nowhere near enough troops here or time to take any of those large cities. So why are they doing it?
It's very hard to understand. A city is the prize of war. It shouldn't be the battleground. If you're attacking an enemy, he knows that city. He knows the alleys. He knows all the ways around it. You are in a strange place. Every ambush that can be made will be made against you. In the past, armies hated to go into cities until after the war was won. They went into the cities because their armor really couldn't operate. They didn't have an enemy suitable for armor. They had to have some sort of campaign. So they wound up with a terror campaign. Not bombing cities, but going to cities and trying to wipe out the resistance. How do you tell the resistance from the population? Well, they did something. They were running out of things to do.
George, the Russian general staff, it presents itself as professional. Have they read the story of Stalingrad? Do they know what that taught the Germans? Their inability to take a city in ruin? Kharkiv and Kiev are far from ruins. Those are battle positions.
Well, I'll put it this way. Putin and I are in the same generation. We grew up in the Cold War. And in the Cold War, the tank was everything. The M60 tank we had, the T-54s they had, we built a war around that. I don't run a country. Putin does. Putin strikes me as having wanted to fight the Battle of the Fulda Gap, this key place in Germany, one time. And he created an armed force that really keyed off of what he learned in his time in the KGB in Germany. Now, does his staff know better? I suspect they know a lot better. But in this particular command structure, Putin could tell them what they did. And it's what I would do if I were reliving my youth.
Surprise and speed. Surprise and speed. They've lost both if they ever had them. Is there a substitute for those?
Overwhelming force, ruthlessly applied, creating a reign of terror. That's about all that's left. He doesn't have surprise. He can't break their backs on surprise. Time, he doesn't have 6 months or a year or 2 years. This is not Afghanistan. He can't turn this into a 20-year war. He's got to end it because he loses all credibility if he doesn't. And so I would expect that he would now decide to bring in massive force to basically crush any opposition and intimidate the citizens.
Taking Kharkiv or taking Kiev, that doesn't end the war. We have Zelensky saying we will fight on the – well, he does Churchill. So Putin is hearing this. There's no end to that conflict. They can fight all the way to the West.
But he has to win this war. He started it. He went in there to do two things. The first, to secure Ukraine as a buffer. And the second, to demonstrate to the world that the Soviets, the Russians, I'm sorry, are a world-class power. He's got to, on the second cast, show that no matter what diversity he has, he can win this war.
The no-fly zone. It's bandied about now routinely capital to capital. Are we headed there, George, or is that a bridge too far?
In this war, air power doesn't have much to lend it. That's why the Russians didn't do it. They didn't have targets. Unless they wanted to bomb the cities, bombing, you know, these minor concentrations was very inefficient. Therefore, for us to bring in anti-air systems, that more systems like, you know, other aircraft like the Polish want to bring in, it really is hitting them not at their weak point. They're hitting them at their unimportant point. We have to hit them at their logistics, at their ability to supply their troops. And there are ways to do that. From the air, it doesn't work all that well. It can be done. But the way to do that is to have a mobile infantry force, which they have, and move around and continually cut their supply routes.
George Friedman is the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures. Don't hit the tank. Hit the bread truck. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.